You need the rest and the recovery to come back and perform the same way an athlete does, the same way a marathon runner does, the same way any high-level professional athlete, singer, performer. We acknowledge that if there's physical involved, but for some reason we've told ourselves if it's all mental, that no, we can just work 80 hours a week and there's no impact. Well, there is.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Executive Health and Life. I'm your host, Julian Hayes II. And today, I got to thinking, and this is a very timely episode that we're recording here, because I just had this conversation with a friend at the gym about work, life, and identity, and separating with that. But before I even get into that more, I think about this thing through the lens of we have renewable and non-renewable resources. And money is a valuable resource. It's an essential tool. We need it. How much? Well, that can be determined by a lot of things. But it's far from being a non-renewable resource, as you can literally print it with the flick of a wrist. Now, time, on the other hand, this is our greatest non-renewable resource. You can't get it back once it's gone. And so my guest today is someone who, when he's not playing beach volleyball, he's helping people get more of their time back, while simultaneously creating greater impact and income. And best of all, my guest is someone who has committed to a lifestyle of three-day weekends so he can enjoy his time with family and friends a little bit more. I'm speaking with none other than Wade Gault. He's an entrepreneur, author, life coach, and creator of the three-day weekend, the three-day weekend club. So without further ado, Wade, how's it going today?
Doing great, man, Julian. Thank you so much for having me. I know you and I did an interview for my show, gosh, quite a while back. And you and I were just laughing about how both of us are so into so many things. We're not always on top of every single moment of production, yet we've enjoyed the ride with this passion project. And I'm just happy to be here, man. Thank you so much. I love what you're doing. I love what you do for people. I've already picked up stuff from working with you. So I'm looking to, even though I'm the guest, I'm still always looking to learn from you as well today.
Well, I appreciate that. And so I have to ask, first thing, the style choices. I like the style choices, and what's the background behind that?
So you mean the shirt and all that stuff?
Yes.
Yeah. So, okay. So my family, my dad's side, they're considered a little bit vain. So what I'm going to sound is going to sound vain, because probably it is. My dad and my mom are from an island, Trinidad and Tobago, in the South, just off South America. And dad grew up big fish, little pond. He was the first guy in the entire island had a fiberglass boat. He played water polo from this and that. And so there's this island, just what I've grown up with. There's a mindset that they have that life is still way more important than work. Like, you can flex all you want. You can pretend. You can talk about your house and stuff. But at the end of the day, it's who plays the best at sports, or who can dance the best, or who sings the best. Like, they're so much more into life than that. So I've always had that in the back. But the vain side is the Gault family. We're known for having a hard time walking past a mirror. when I see myself in this, actually, it just makes me happy. I've always liked bright clothing. So in my office, I have lots of other shirts up that kind of like Mr. Rogers. I have them hanging up. So it's part of the decor in the area. And I recently added this guy behind me, kind of just something to remind me as well. But I just find when I'm in this place, unlike what some people say, let's say the downside of a dress down Friday, where sometimes people say, well, you know, then employees don't take things seriously. And I happen to work with financial people where you actually probably don't want to dress down on a Friday, because people are like, whoa, you're not serious about my money today. So some places you almost can't do a dress down Friday without hurting you. In my case, I'm an entrepreneur. I work with entrepreneurs. And this does speak out to, yes, what I am doing. I'm enjoying life. I'm making more time for family, for friends, for fun. Still very focused on living life and helping my customers, but making sure that there's so much more time for life, because, as you said, it's definitely a non-renewable resource.
Yeah. So, yeah, I appreciate hearing that. And there's a lot of intentionality behind that. And, you know, speaking of intentionality, I know we got this podcast booked months ago because you took the summer off with family and friends. So where did this intentionality come from?
So if someone were to ask me what's the difference between my life when I was not living what I would call a three-day weekend lifestyle, which, by the way, is not tied to 3 days. And in fact, I'm already finding mine shifting a little as our kids are 17 and 14. They're senior and freshmen in high school. So they'll, you know, as they start reaching that age, you, as much as you hate to admit it, whenever they say, hey, you want to do something? You're like, sure. No, I don't have work. Who cares? Because they're in their world. They're doing their thing. And so randomly, certainly during the summer, on a Tuesday morning at 10, daughter will be like, hey, you want to go play volleyball? Okay, great. So what can I move? What can I shift? What can I, you know, what can, how can I make sure I'm fully present for this time of life where, especially as parents, they'll be out of the house soon. They're not, hopefully, they're not dying, but it's still a different level of quality of attention. And so one of the things that I found very quickly was I can still do far better work when they're in school and I'm just doing my work and do my absolute best work. And then there's certain types of work that I've done for years, like coaching and stuff I can do on autopilot. It doesn't mean I'm not good at it. I'm actually, I've done it so long that at least mm-hmm. for however, whatever my level is, I'm as good as I'm going to get. And overall, just realizing that there is this sort of ebb and flow in life as far as when I have more energy. And in pro sports, other than, let's say, golf or tennis or some of those type of sports, there's a preseason, there's a season, there's a postseason, there's an off season, there's seasons. And there isn't, you know, there's seasons in nature. So for me, it's about being able to enjoy each season because I do have a lot of type A in me. I want to go, you know, and push hard and hustle at things sometimes. In fact, I recently... I'm going to dork out a little bit here because I'm getting garb. I'm so, like I said, the vanity thing, but I'm just, it's not printed the way I want you, but I just finally, this is something I've been telling people.
Dude, play three yeah. days, hustle play four. Three days, I like hustle that.
Four. So I tell people like, dude, I still hustle. I'm not always hustling, mm-hmm. you know, cause you're not going to just be like, oh, you're just lazy. No, you're just, you know, you're hoping that everybody's going to pay for your ride. No, heck no. But having time to be present with things. And so for me, I also just realized my quality of attention just isn't as good for my customers over the summer. Whereas if I'm writing or creating or building courses, I can pop in and pop out of that. And there's not a big drop off when I really want to be present with my customers. Like when I do my group coaching, I'll have a 12-week thing basically in fall when the kids are kind of in school for the most part. And in spring when the kids are, so there is very much intentionality also as far as when am I going to most likely be my best, as opposed to not just, well, it's all about weight and I want to do this, I want to do that. I know if I deliver at a certain time after about 10, 12 weeks working with customers, that's great. They usually need a break. I need a break. So that allows me to have a certain pace.
That's a lot of
pace is it. The pace is it. So sorry for that. I mean, that was a lot of words of saying it. A buddy of mine has a book called Space Makers. And he talks about the difference between space and pace. And pace is getting stuff done, and space is making room. But overall, if I have a certain rhythm, a certain cadence, sort of like music, like beats per minute, I can marathon forever. I can reggae it forever. Now, if you're going to ask me to, I can't do that forever. So part of it is that there's times when I'll have a little bit of crazy pace, but for the most part, at a certain pace, I can kind of do this all day.
I like that because and that's going to really stick out in my head, because when you're just constantly going, going and going and going, it's hard for you to really reflect and see, is this ship still going in the same direction that it needs to go? You can look at this from a business perspective, a health perspective, relationship standpoint, and just to have time to breathe and really look at things and evaluate. It's such an important thing. And it's something that probably a lot of entrepreneurs have struggled with, because as an entrepreneur, it's all on you when you're, especially the early times, and nobody really wants to go back to those times if they have them. So maybe they're scared to go back to there. So they're always thinking, I can't afford to stop. So, you know, that leads me into the thing of, we talked about it a little bit, but what is like the ethos of 3-day weekend club? What would you say is the ethos?
The first thing is that life comes before work. And it goes right back to, and I don't think it was, well, Stephen Covey in his book, did the big rocks, the big rocks first. If you have your water, a jug of water, you put it in rocks, you have big rocks, little rocks, what? Sand and pebbles, or pebbles and sand. And if you put in all the small stuff first, you can't fit the big rocks, the most important things. Whereas if you put the big rocks in first, everything kind of wiggle around it. For me, the big rocks are faith, although that doesn't take up a lot of time. For me, I meditate and pray, and I try to connect here and there with God. I do my meditating, but that really is an asset for me. It's not a time commitment thing, if that makes sense. There's time involved, but I always get more than I put into it. Family, just because I've seen so much of the entrepreneurs I've worked with, people that have come back and said, wait, I missed the window. And usually the main window they're talking about is when my kids were between a certain age. And it's not even till age 16, it's till age about 10 when they're like, okay, they're 11, 12, 13. They're already now starting to look outside the house for wisdom, for role models, but from till about basically fifth grade in the US or about 11, 12, I think is what Maria Montessori said, that they're still looking inside the house and, you know, mom and dad or whoever's inside the house for their role modeling, those sort of things. So that's very important to me. Those come first. But then also as an entrepreneur, my customers still have to come first enough that I delivered an extremely high level for them. And what's happened over time, to your point, when I first started, it was just, what do I do? I need to pay bills. Because my first escape, and I think for most entrepreneurs, the first sort of escape is, and for some people, and for me, it was escape was a word. I was running from something. I wasn't yet fully running to something. Mm-hmm. It was escaping from corporate regulations on my time. I loved the work that I did. Awesome company. I asked them if they could be more flexible. But this is like 23 years ago. They're waiting. Sorry, we can't right now. There's so many of us. If we make an exception for you, we're going to have to make it for everybody else. They can't do necessarily what you can do. Now, maybe they were just being, you know, flattering me or whatever. But so the first thing was, okay, how do I still at least make the same income and now have more time flexibility? Not even less time working, but flexibility. I want to go do this at this time. I want to do those pieces. And then as I started doing that, then I would have these micro decisions to decide, okay, well, am I going to really work hard and worry about this project? Or am I going to be fully present while my kid's around the house? Am I going to continue to work from home? So when he walks, our firstborn's a boy, that I'll be there. And those are decisions I made. And I can certainly point to financial costs where had I been brick and mortar the whole time, I'd have made more money. But we wouldn't have spent, with my wife who's from Peru, 4 years living back and forth between the US and Peru. We wouldn't have been able to enjoy family, which was such a huge part of the ethos for me, watching my parents leave their island, not go back, and watching at time my mom and my dad miss their island, even though they could go back. Trinidad's not so politically stable and safe at times, so that would sort of impact how much we went back and forth. And so realizing assumes it's true, but at least for me and for my wife, that our family is more important than our work. And that's not a knock in any way on our customers. We love our customers and some of them almost as much as family, but there's still that sense of that comes first. And eventually for me, trying to do that in 7 days was very difficult to put a pause on the button. So the 3-day weekends was for me. I needed that thing. And so there's a gentleman, Dan Sullivan, he's sort of more making himself known. He's been around as long as Tony Robbins. He's a phenomenal coach, but whereas Tony Robbins is more known by everybody, Dan Sullivan only recently has put out books like The Gap and the Gain, Who Not How, 10X is Easier Than 2X. And in his coaching program, he talks about if you're going to have a day off, what he calls a free day, it's 24 hours, midnight to midnight. You don't do squat. That's work, because otherwise you never really recharged. And he's very much more than just a believer. He's proven you need the rest and the recovery to come back and perform the same way an athlete does, the same way a marathon runner does, the same way any high-level professional athlete, singer, performer. We acknowledge that if there's physical involved, but for some reason we've told ourselves if it's all mental that no, we can just work 80 hours a week and there's no impact. Well, there is. And it's like when you're stupid or dead, you don't know it, but everybody else does. Or when you're a jerk. You know, so for me, that balance, and then finally, looking at the feedback of the people around me of who am I when I become a little bit of an a-hole, when I haven't gotten my rest, and then I'm snapping at my wife and I'm not talking to the way I want to, or I'm snapping at my kids and it's like, whoa, whoa, nope, got to fix something, got to get out that personal, something's got to shift. I'm not going to be that guy. I mean, I've made pretty much all the mistakes. We've never hit our kids, that sort of stuff, but I've made a lot of mistakes. Everything that puts a lot on the table. I've made a lot of mistakes, not all the mistakes, but people are like, oh my God. But at the same time, there's ones that you make where you're like, okay, kids are paying the butt. And there's other ones you're like, oh wow. I always kind of either A, committed I'd never be that person, or B, never thought that would come out of me. I need to take a step back. And so for me, when my pace is a certain level, if you look at yoga, breathing, music, the space in between the notes, the space in between the breaths. And my personality just happens to be, as much as I love basketball, I can't do cardio very long. I can play volleyball on the beach in 90 degree weather for 6 hours. Why? Because there's a point and there's a breath and there's in between. So for me, it happens to resonate even with my personality or just my rhythms. I've never been accused of being fast twitch. I've very been often the word slow twitch have been used many times in my, I'm 6 foot three, I play volleyball, but in all of that, I think the commonality for most people is even if you like the fast twitch and the excitement of it, which I do, or the, there's a point where your body's like, it's like, you know, 10 things of ice cream. At what point is the ice cream no longer tasty? At what time is your stomach starting to hurt? Whatever it happens to be. And so the ethos really is looking around, not for validation and approval so much, but for, hey, are we all on the same page? We're family. Are we, we're still, I'm supporting you as best as you can. You're going to have your moments. I'm going to have my moments. But is this the vibe? Is this the pace that we committed to and want? And that's probably of all the things I do, you know, sometimes you help your customers and your clients and you help them with something that's not on your SEO or in your website. And it's not that you're trying to sneak attack them. It's just, it's something that extra that then later people will say, oh, that's what Wei did. I help people with perspective. I've been blessed. I've seen a lot of people rethink their life, do different things. I've, in my psychology work, worked with kids with addictions and a lot of issues and stuff. So I think that for me, I've been blessed to understand what's really important. And so I'm not going to sacrifice that for, certainly not for the pain in the butt client.
Why do you think so many of us entrepreneurs and even high level execs and others in high leadership roles struggle with just failing to take, be there for their family, their friends, and usually their personal life as well? And they know it's important, but it's just for some reason doesn't happen.
Because they're the last people to read your book, write you a podcast, review, listen to your podcast, know you have a podcast, even sometimes give an F if you have a podcast, which keeps you humble. So you hear all the people talk about, I mean, what's in the Bible, a prophet's not recognized in his own town. You know, in your own house, people humble you. I mean, everyone I've listened to from Brendan Burchard or all these different people, like, yeah, in my own house, they're like, no, you're not, or Wayne Dyer's like, yeah, my kids are like, they pay you to talk? And so I think there's that piece where, jokes aside, it is intoxicating when somebody tells you you're brilliant. It is awesome when somebody says, wow, or leaves that review. Or I have a gentleman who I'm now friends with. And the first time we talked, he's like, dude, your podcast is so awesome. I listen to it every day. And he's my age. And he's a very talented entrepreneur. And it freaked me out because I almost thought, is he coming from an angle? Is he trying to sell me something? What's his... And then at the finally I realized, I'm like, this particular message for him makes a resonance. Now I have more than one subscriber, but he also verbalized it back to me. He's also a podcaster, so he understands what it means to then share it. And it was like, wow, dude, that's intoxicating. And I don't mean that in a more than intoxicating, because well, it is intoxicating, but it's also extremely fulfilling, because when we do stuff like this, you and I talked about this, you and I could both monetize things a lot quicker. I mean, so anybody who listens to podcasts is not a fast monetization path. It is a long-term service thing. You will eventually make money. Basically, you meet a lot of awesome people, great relationships, and you might make some money off of it, depending on how you approach it. And there's certain people that, you know, you can do it different ways. But overall, the quality that comes out of that, I think, is huge. It's longer game stuff. But when you're an exec and you're seeing the quarterly reports, when you're an entrepreneur or you're a salesperson, you see the monthly reports and you're comparing with each other. And especially if there's a leaderboard and there's pins, points, and plaques and trophies and goodies involved, everybody wants those in our family. Anybody gets tired of anybody after a while or takes people for granted, whether they try to or not. I could tell you, I don't ever take my wife for granted. That'd be a crock. I'm a human. I've lived on the beach. The first week you live on the beach, you're there at the beach every single day. You're in the water, you're swimming. Week two, you're there 6 days, then 4 days. And it doesn't mean you're ungrateful. It doesn't mean you don't, it's just that your body has gotten acclimatized to it. And so I think you really have to bring that for yourself. You have to meet that own need, because the executive world, then I don't think it's necessarily inherently evil. Now, there are some people that try to manipulate people and whatnot in that, as in any other situation, but inherently, when you're getting that feedback, you know, it can be difficult. And this is, wow, this is going to sound really shallow, but I say, you know, when you find the guy at the office who cheats with the girl and you're like, his wife is so much hotter than the girl he cheated on. How the heck? But he was getting feedback. He was getting validation. He was being told he's brilliant. And maybe that's something the wife didn't even know was a need. And it's not necessarily her fault. It's not her job to fulfill every single need he has. So I think it's one of those things where if you can understand that you're not going to get all your needs met in one place, and you can be more likely to meet your sports needs with your sports group and your family needs with your family group. And then you can reach a point, because even after a while, when you're making money, there are points, I assume you've experienced this, any entrepreneurs also had the highs so high where eventually you're like, oh, another check. And you're like, whereas 3 months earlier, you're like, oh my God, if I could just have one of those checks. And then all of a sudden, you know, sun starts shining, you get some, hey, like another check. And you tell your spouse or your girlfriend or whoever it is, wow, I'm so tired. I want the checks to keep coming. I want them to keep coming. Mm-hmm. But man, I'm tired. And so I think it's just balancing that and having a sense of day and night and natural flow. And because there's going to be ups and downs, but if you chase any one of them for too long, it just, we're not built to do that.
Yeah. Man, I could totally relate to that. Especially when it comes to just the physical performance sports world. I remember when I first started, I just didn't want to be invisible, feel like I'm invisible anymore. And then so the smallest compliment, oh man, you look like you're getting bigger. Oh man, your shoulders are, it means the world to you. Now someone can say that, I'm still going to be courteous and say thank you and all that. But, oh wow, you run that? Oh, okay, cool. That's cool. Whatever. I'm thankful for it and grateful yes. for it, but it's just second nature to me now. So I don't even think about it. So even when I maybe blurt out some absurd distance to most people, it's just second nature to me. And we have these kind of things in all our life, but we put a lot of our identity on those things, which kind of can be, I know for me, when I got injured once and I couldn't, I think I had to take 10 days off. 10 days to me is like a year or 2 years to some people. And I just felt lost. I think I started eating junk food and stuff just because I didn't have nothing to do. It just, so I didn't realize that a lot of my identity was tied up into my sports performance. And so the reason why I say this is a lot of us have our hard time shaping or separating our identity from our work. And so what have you seen some of the best tools to kind of help separate that? Because as an entrepreneur, a lot of times when you're building and building, you might not see results for a very long time. And I can speak to this personally, that if you put your self-worth on seeing the results that are going to take time, there's going to be a lot of days consecutively that you're not going to feel good going to bed.
Yeah, there's a lot of things around perspective. So on the street I live, there's a kid, a neighborhood kid. He does prank YouTube videos. He does them really well. The guy's got at least 100 to 1,000 times more TikTok and YouTube followers than I am. He's 17. Kicking my ass. Wow. Just, you know, and so you're like, okay. So every time I see him at a family, a neighborhood get together, he's like, you're not there yet. I'm like, yeah, okay. And, you know, so first of all, there's that sense of, but I know where I'm going, what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And on one hand, I could analyze and say, well, you know, he's doing gig video or gag videos. So of course he's going to, but at the end of the day, he's doing his thing, I'm doing mine. Second thing for me is something that I was blessed to learn. And I don't know how I learned it, but I definitely was given it by somebody because I didn't know it, was when I was working on my master's degree in psychology. And it was the idea that I didn't heal you and I didn't break you. So when you come to me as a customer, a coach, a client, a fitness trainer, whatever it is, my child, I'm not going to fix you and I'm not going to take 100% credit for the win. Because if that happens, when the loss comes, that's really tough. So for example, there was a kid I was working with who was, 15 at the time. He had some not so nice things happen. He had been cutting. And less physically dangerous to him, but it's still never a great sign. So it wasn't the intense, like, oh my gosh, you're literally in threat of dying, but that's never good any way you look at it. And I worked with him for about maybe 3 months. And during that time, we're doing individual counseling, some group stuff, anger management, addiction stuff and whatnot. And he had stopped cutting for 3 months. So I keep getting these, oh wait, that's so awesome, this and that. You did that. I'm like, and I'm just thinking to myself, nope, didn't do this. And I think I got all of this from Wayne Dyer too. You didn't do this. And then funnily enough, as normally happens, eventually something triggered something and he started cutting again. Wade, what did you do? I'm like, whoa, so, sorry, you're not understanding the gig here. I don't have the power to stop him. I don't have the power to make him. And so if I take credit, athletics, if the win is all about me, I'm the greatest ever. as opposed to a team got me here, a village got me here, my coach, my people, my team. If you, you know, the stuff, the platitudes, the thing you're supposed to say, but if you really believe that,
yeah,
then when you lose, you can be Dan Marino, never having won a Super Bowl, and say, I was still pretty damn good, as opposed to saying, well, you know, Joe Montana is infinitely better than me. He's got four rings, and you could argue those, but is Joe four times better than him? Probably not. Didn't have a running back in the Dolphins. These are my pains from my childhood. but there, so there's things where I think you can say, okay, I'm going to do my best and I'm going to give what I can give. And there's a line, one of my coaches, mentors, she passed a few years back, quite a few years back, Debbie Ford, talked about a line in the Talmud, and I might say it wrong, but she said, if you can understand that there are two truths, that you are simultaneously an insignificant sand of dust or grain of sand, and that the entire universe was created just for you, and that both of those have truth to them. Mm. And if you can realize, so you're nothing and you're everything. So, and again, it's a belief, it's an idea, maybe it's empirically true or not, I don't know, I'm not that smart. But it's one of those things to say, okay, let's keep it in perspective. And, or as I like to joke with my volleyball buddies, because we fancy ourselves good at what we do. And as I like to joke with them, I said, you got to remember, in the U.S., if you're the best, even if you're the best beach volleyball player, this might tick off some of my volleyball players, but you're still not the best athlete in the country. If you're in Brazil and you're the best soccer player in Brazil, you might be one of the best athletes, because everybody's going towards soccer. And even then, they still diversify a little bit. If you're in Argentina and you're the best soccer player, you are the best athlete, period. Everybody wants it. America? Well, there's a lot of guys playing football, baseball. So, you know, in our sport, we're not the absolute cream of the crop. And so I tell them, look, our world athletic ranking has at least 6 or 7 zeros after it. Even our world beach volleyball ranking now, me in my early 50s, has a good 3 to 4 zeros after it. So it's like, in other words, this one game isn't going to define you. This one loss isn't going to define you. And I remember hearing one of the greats in volleyball, Randy Stoklos, he was being interviewed, and some guy in the middle of the interview goes up, I know you, I beat you, blah, 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 this tournament, this, that. And he goes, you probably did. He says, I've lost to everybody. He says, and I've sure as heck beaten everybody a lot of times. It's like, okay.
I needed that perspective, because I didn't handle losing that well.
I still don't. I rationalize. It's a more evolved, rationalize, yeah. Excuses. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, when I was going through your book, I highlighted a sentence I really liked. It said, obedience to the mission is not the same as commitment to a mission. And so I really love that. And it's a lot of nuance in that. So what exactly does that mean? And what inspired that sentence?
So my mom has introduced me to so many different writers. And it's funny, this is the first time I've never experienced it now. I remember that line. I don't remember writing that line, but I know where I would have gotten it from. There's a gentleman by the name of Jiddu Krishnamurti. And he's one of those thinkers. His last name, Krishnamurti. And he's like one of those thinkers, like at a Ken Wilber level, like you read one of their books and you read like a paragraph and you're like, okay, well, slow down, brother. There's like so much in this. And one of his sort of concepts was, he was somebody that in his tradition, he was considered to be this huge prophet and all this stuff. And he's like, whoa, no. It's like, don't come to me to be a prophet. It's like, I have some ideas. He says, you go to yourself, you find your own truth. And he'd always say, don't trust me, find out. Don't believe what I'm telling you, find out. Like, take the idea, like, you know, listen to what I'm saying. But he's like, don't believe me, experiment. So he was sort of the non-guru guru. Like, I don't want to be your guru. I'm going to share with you some ideas, but you go figure them out, because it might not be the truth and whatnot. And one of the things he talked about is he just, and I I needed to hear this. I'm not a very disciplined person. I took the StrengthsFinder. It's like number 32 out of 34. I'm a very committed and motivated and hardworking person, but I'm not disciplined. But I realized later, I don't want to be disciplined. And I realized this thing of, he's like, well, discipline, what's discipline? It's just repeating something over and over. You're not sure if it's where you're taking you. And again, there's so many ways to nuance discipline. So I'm not like, I do yoga every day, just about. I do meditation just about every day, but some days I don't. That's okay. And I know that if I do yoga 5 out of 7 days a week, or if I do meditate 5 out of 7 days a week, I'm not going to punish myself over the 1 or 2 days. So there's an overall trend, and I am putting in the work, and I 1,000% believe in work. But to use a very practical example for an entrepreneur, I heard about podcasting about 14 years ago. And in the first 7 years, I took the same course that Pat Flynn and the same group did 14 years ago. He took action. I did. He took action right away. He's also been one of my awesome guy. 7 years later, I still had not done an episode.
Oh, wow.
So for 7 years, but because I was so, it had to be perfect. In my OCD-ish disciplined mind, it had to be perfect. Well, then roughly seven years ago, I started. So by now I should, on a weekly podcast, have 360 episodes. Mm-hmm. I have 209. 209 is a truckload better than zero and way better than most. So I'll still take that, but it's that sense of really being passionate about stuff, but then also being open enough. I believe, you know, anytime you talk about humility, it's a vicious circle. It's like the devil's advocate at the end where he goes, gotcha. Where you think like I'm being so humble. And then now you sound like a jackass because you're trying to say that I'm being so humble and you don't sound very humble. But I think I've gotten my butt kicked enough that it's like, dude, I don't know the answer. So I'm always looking for around. I do believe there's a God. Maybe there is, maybe there isn't. But I look around, I listen for answers. So for me, discipline and obedience can reach a part where it's like, to me, obedience is where you've turned off your brain. And that's some of the most dangerous acts in our history have been done in what I would call obedience as opposed to commitment to something. But realize, whoa, we're committed to this, but now you're saying we need to do this. That's not of the spirit of what we set out to do. So no, hell no, I'm not obeying. I'm still committed, have not lost my commitment. And so from that perspective, that's that little bit of, I want to make sure that this is still working, that the chip, that there's not a chip in there, that nobody puts a chip in. And we all have somewhat of a chip in there, some beliefs, whether they're good or not so good, that were put in there. But so obedience to me is a scary thing for me.
So I was looking while you were talking. I took the StrengthsFinder as well. So discipline is number 24 for me. Nice. So do you remember your dominant themes, like your top
two? My first one is ideation. So I got a lot of ideas. I've never met an idea I didn't like.
Okay.
I have relator and woo in my top three. Okay. Relator means I like to meet new people. Mm-hmm. Woo means I like to get to know people deeply. And I'm happily married, so I need podcast interviews. I need to get to know people. I need to talk to them for at least 45 minutes. Otherwise, I'm going to lose my mind. And then I have strategic and I have maximizer. Maximizer, which is I like to work with people and get them from good to great. I don't always as much love getting them from zero to good. Though in volleyball, yeah. I love all of it. So
yeah, woo is number 31 for me.
Okay. What are your top five?
My top five were, number one was futuristic, then strategic, then competition, focus, and intellection.
Awesome.
So, and this made sense when I did this, and I even had someone kind of work through like, what does this stuff mean? And it's a very good thing to actually develop relationships. So I did think when a time comes and I'm getting serious about getting married, that I think I'm going to have her take this as well, so we can learn how to communicate better with each other.
Absolutely.
So, and it's a great team builder thing as well, you know. And so, speaking of teams, entrepreneurs are going to have teams. But first of all, when an entrepreneur is looking to go about doing this and creating this type of lifestyle, one of the first objections maybe is, how can I do this without, you know, I'm going to lose income or I'm going to risk things in my business? Or even before that, I would imagine, because I even thought about this myself, is it's almost like a feeling of guilt. Deserving to do something like this. It just feels because, you know, as entrepreneurs and stuff, we're supposed to charge hard, you know, we're supposed to work all the time. That's who we see on social media. That's who we see on TV. That's who gets all the accolades, is the hard chargers and all that stuff.
So a couple things. I encourage you to note the behavior of the influencers you're watching, because some of them will do anything for attention. And some of them are specifically following an ethos or a code or a theme. The ones that are following an ethos or a code or a theme might still be very consistent, but you're not going to usually see them do outlandish stuff for attention's sake. The other ones, and those ones usually have another business other than their influencer business. So, and mm-hmm. I don't like to, well, yeah, if the person you're following for life advice is only an influencer, be very careful, because an influencer needs likes. And they need the dopamine hits, and they need to get you to have dopamine hits. They need to make you feel good and either BS you or put you down or flatter you or whatever it might be. Versus if somebody's, let's say, a coach or a teacher or a realtor, any business where like majority of their income is not coming from influence, they can afford to tell you the truth or their truth without worrying if they're going to pay their bills or not. And so for me, I think when you're building a team, one of the first things, again, is to go back to this athlete example. Again, if you're about to play in the Super Bowl and it's 3 days before the Super Bowl, are you going to do 3 days workouts before the Super Bowl? No, you're going to rest, because literally it's not a linear thing. If you've been in marketing or business, you know there's a thing called diminishing returns. There's a point at which you're no longer effective. Most work studies on entrepreneurs and or workers in the workforce suggest that most people can do their peak best work for about at most 4 to 6 hours per day. So then you start thinking about what does someone like a Taylor Swift, Sting from The Police, Bono from U2, what are they cranking out 12-hour days? No. When they reach the point of, they might still be working hard in the studio at different times, but when they start performing, they actually now have to preserve their ability, and they make their most money, most of them, on tour. Mm-hmm. So they've got to be able to deliver. They've got to deliver live. There's no, okay, hi, I wasn't feeling good. They got to deliver, do it. So they're nurturing, they're getting rest. If they're not, go back to the ethos of, let's say, the 70s and 80s bands. They're just, and this is not all of them, so definitely not making this as a blanket statement, but many of them just threw uppers at it, like stimulants and drugs. Well, I mean, hey, and so I'm going to keep going. And you see people, and you know, you look at the way different musicians, you now see hear more and more musicians that'll say, no, I don't drink, I don't do drugs. And, you know, people that are high level, they're like, no, I can't cloud my brain. I hear a lot of rappers say that, mm-hmm. but their lyrics. And so I'm like, no, I can't afford to. If I want to be at this next level, I have to cut that out. The same way an athlete would say, I can't have, you know, junk food. So to me, if you realize that not all the hours in your day are even close to equal. You know, if you talk to a programmer, programmers, there's a saying in programming that a good programmer, a great programmer is worth anywhere from 10 to 100 average programmers. And if you look at like some of Perry Marshall's work, the book 80-20 Sales and Marketing, and he talks about, and there's different ways you can do it, but he does this so well. I try not to reinvent what people said brilliantly. He says, look, are you doing mm-hmm. $10 an hour work, $100 an hour work, $1,000 work, or $10,000 an hour work? And he says, some of the things you do, like for example, he uses an example in his book. He's like, you know, tweaking your website, that's $10 an hour work-ish. And again, maybe now it's 15 because of inflation, but it's the concept. You know, whereas creating a new sales offer that might have a course that generates huge amounts, that's $1,000 to $10,000 an hour work. So it's not how many hours you're putting in, how many hours of work that's actually getting results are you putting in, and can you maximize those? And for most people, it's their first working hours of the day, not necessarily the first hours of the day. Some people are more early morning or late morning people or whatever it might be, but your first hours, it's like if you said, what's, you know, if I'm going to work out, if I had to work out today, if I'm a professional athlete, I'm working out earlier in the day, not later. Something might come up. I might feel tired of this and that. So as a knowledge worker, our brain is not focused. It can operate, but it's not focused for 8 to 10 to 12 hours. So when you look at this idea of believing falsely that you, all of your hours are worth the same, that's not even close. You get on a good introductory call with a customer, a strategy session, whatever you want to call it, and you book that customer to a 10,000 hour coaching relationship, that is worth way more than the next hour where you're tweaking your website or replying to some emails. So then how do you get more of that first hour? How do you, or do things that are directly related to that? And so that's that piece of, as you start delegating, you have an option that many of us did not have 20 years ago. 20 years ago, when my software business started exploding, I had to hire somebody full time. So I had to wait till my income was enough. I mean, at that point for our family, I waited till my income was about 180,000 because I knew I was going to have to drop like 60,000 to get a decent person. So here I was, you know, I wanted to just like chill at about 120, but no, the business was growing. Well, you can't tell people go away. My product, no, mm-hmm. I don't want your business. And then it's now growing at these two seasonal times of the year, and now I'm hiring. And then later, when that business took a hit and dropped about 40%, I'm like, great, well, there's enough for me. Oh, wait, I now have this employee, and this is pre-Upwork, pre-Fiverr, pre these different things, to where now I now need to go hustle and sell just to pay this person's salary so that I can, that was way harder. Today, you can just say, look, on Upwork, which is a site for hiring freelancers, there's other sites like it, I need somebody for 5 hours a week to edit my podcast or to do my email or to be my personal assistant or screen my emails or filter my emails or different things. But overall, if you're looking for the absolute most likely suspect, get the heck off your social media until you're making enough money. Even if you have no social media. And that, somebody might say, wait, that's nonsense. Well, if you're a social media influencer, perhaps. If you're a coach, if you're not at least making close to the income you need, or if you can't afford the freelancer, yes, do a couple posts here and there, do your podcast, whatever, as it gets the message out there. But other than that, be mute on there, because otherwise, again, what if you were even, you know, this whole dollars for hours things. Wait, I don't trade dollars for hours. I don't want to be an employee. Lionel Messi and LeBron James are employees.
Yes.
They're doing okay.
Yeah.
So how much are you making per hour? What are you doing when you're doing those things? So if you can, you know, this whole rugged entrepreneur thing of I'm not taking anybody's money, I'm never going to work for somebody coming straight out of high school, and I'm just going to go till I make it, you are either going to compromise in money or more of these things, your integrity, your lifestyle, your hairline, your relationships, all sorts of things. Instead of just realizing, you know what, most people in order to get somewhere had to mentor under somebody. And guess what? When you're mentoring, you're being paid. So you pay your bills, you get paid. And as you get better, even with customers, I have customers, I have huge customers that are investing huge amounts. I have customers I've had for years that have billed me at a lower dollar amount, but I have a consistent, steady income. So it's this sort of balance. But to all of that, when I know I can make it sometimes $100 an hour, yes, all of my $10 an hour work needs to go away. Even if it means I need to hustle up one more hour per week, I can hustle one more hour and then give away 10 hours. And when you first commit, because most good freelancers want at least a 5 to 10 hour a week commitment. So initially, you're not going to know what the heck to give them. You're first going to dump a bunch of stuff. And then sometimes you're going to give them horrible instructions and it's going to be garbage in, garbage out. And then you need to come back and say, whoops. You can either blame them and fire them or say, whoa, hold on. What did you understand? So it takes you a while to get used to that. And you'll burn a little bit of money, but not as much money when you drop $10,000 on that course that you thought would save you, or $1,000 and you didn't never implemented the, you know, never implemented it. So we most of us have done that at some point. I've done that plenty of times. But as you start realizing, then number one, you learn how to then delegate something in a way, in a sort of SOP-ish standard operating procedure type of way, where when you ask for something, that anybody could do it, not because the freelancer is so talented, but because your instructions are so clear and you get that back. And then, yes, you do need to hustle some more, but if you're currently working, for example, usually I'm talking to entrepreneurs, they're working about 50 hours a week. Usually we can get them to about 30 hours a week, at least the strategy. It might take them 6 months to make this happen. But if we just look at like where you invest your time, in 30 hours a week, they could be making usually 20% more money by letting go of those either crutch activities or activities that you show up on a Friday. And if you know, why do people work Fridays as entrepreneurs? Well, Wade, I was kind of tired. I mean, yeah, I didn't know what to do, but I could either pick my nose, which isn't going to make me any money, or I could do something. So I did something. What did you do? Well, I moved around this. Okay, so you did nothing. You would have been better off going out doing something you love. And even if you came back later that day and did 2 hours of work, even if you don't even, you know, but just done something exciting as opposed to showing up like it's a job, obeying the 40-hour work week because, what, 100-plus years ago, Henry Ford did it as a downgrade from the 6-day work week because somebody said it as opposed to, you know, what's going to create the hugest impact for my customers. So if you want to take the self-criticism of, oh, I'm being so greedy, what's going to create that huge impact for your customer? Do that, even if it doesn't get you paid. If you have the extra time. But any of the $10 an hour work, the editing stuff, editing a podcast, different things like those, editing your show notes, different things, some combination of a personal assistant and AI can do a lot of that stuff. So yeah.
Yeah, and another good thing is also to keep in mind is that, you know, when you are, you know, with this attitude of I'm never gonna take a paycheck from somebody else, that paycheck is still money that you can invest. And so it's about what you do with the money. You know, I've read a lot of stories of people who have made maybe only $20,000 as a salary their whole year, and they become multimillionaires compared to somebody who's making six figures and doesn't have any type of discipline with their money. So that's a key thing as well with that as well. And so and that's something I had to learn as well. And so I really liked all that right there. And if you think about it, the PayPal Mafia, they don't call them that for a reason. Go look up the PayPal Mafia. Go look at I believe, the first five or six people at Facebook, and they were, some of them were quote unquote employees, and didn't see what happened. And also they had pretty good payouts too, as well. So I think there's a lot of ways to skin it. And I had this conversation, a kid asked me, I just want to be an entrepreneur and all that. And I was like, why do you want to be an entrepreneur? And it was a lot of the talking points that you would see on social media, be your own boss, live a life of freedom and all of that. And I was like, well, those things can probably happen, but it's probably going to take longer than you think. And it's going to be a little more difficult. I can tell you, I've been doing this for a few years and I'm still an adolescent at this. And I'm not even at that stage that those people talk about. Right. So I think you're thinking about guys typically that are probably 45, 50 years old who have been doing this for a good amount of time that can do that. But for the rest of us, we are still very much hustling or whatever you're trying not to do. So it's you got to be very mindful. And you brought that point up earlier about social media and what you're consuming. We talk about a food diet, a nutritional diet, but we oftentimes do not talk about a informational diet.
Yeah. And to your point, you know, there's that whole, the joke, you know, as an entrepreneur, I get to work, I get to work part-time, any 12 hours of the day that I want. It's not a short fix. Some people are infinitely happier working 40 hours a week, leaving at 5:01, and that's better for them.
And that's
And that's not bad. There's no shame. Being an entrepreneur, it's become trendy, and it's like, no, hold on. Look at the whole picture. It's like, okay, it's like being a professional, an NBA athlete. Yes, the dunks look nice. Do you know how hard those guys are working? Even the ones you think that aren't working hard, that are like on the 7th, 8th, they're 10th on the bench. I love the thing. Oh gosh, the White Mamba. I love what he's doing. Have you seen this? I'm forgetting his name. Brian Scalabrine. I don't know if you saw this. So Brian Scalabrine played for a few other teams, but mainly the Celtics, and they called him the White Mamba. So he's a ginger guy on the Celtics, which is perfect. And I think he averaged, let's say it was 6 to 7 points a game through his career. So some guy in some post or some Facebook thing called him out and said, oh, he sucks, he this, he that. So he decided, and he might still be doing it. He's got to be in his mid-50s by now. He's roughly my age. He decided to start just going out and taking guys on one-on-one in games to 11, destroying them, absolutely destroying them. And so there was a reference that somebody made, and people were like, look, you think because Brian Scalabrine or a guy on the NBA bench is here compared to LeBron's and the Dwayne Wade's, you think, he says, but you're like, you're not even on the screen, man. You're like, there's, and that's still how hard they're working. Even the lazy ones are working so hard. So yeah, entrepreneurship is definitely not for everybody. In fact, worldwide, it's roughly 1 out of 10 people that is an entrepreneur. Now it's a little more than that, but you have a lot of people doing side hustles, so they can go back to something. There's nothing wrong with that. That's a great actual way to get started. But I've been doing this over 20 years. I have pretty much the lifestyle I want. I would like to triple to quadruple my income. And because I'm more focused on lifestyle, I'm not saying you can't do both. But it's very few and far between the ones who are making 7 figures and enjoying the lifestyle and having time for family and are happy. And I'm not saying that as a challenger. I hope to. I want to learn more to how to do that. I'm trying to help people do that. I can do that at 6-figure levels, not yet at 7. But it's work, and there's pieces to it I think people don't realize. And it sounds great. But again, when you then say, well, to be Kobe Bryant, here's how many hours you're going to be in the gym. You say, you know what? I'll just play some pickup games. Because whatever word you want to put on his relationship with basketball. There's a gentleman by the name of Bo Eason who does coaching for entrepreneurs. He played in the NFL for a while, then he did a Broadway play after he had this career-ending injury. He's a phenomenal dude. And he was doing the study once where he was noticing these hotbeds of athletic activity that were just doing really well. And one of them, or sorry, he read the study of a gentleman who did this. And one of, there's a swimming, some sort of, it was a high school, I think it was, or a university or an academy, that they just were producing ridiculously disproportionate numbers of like Olympic level athletes. Then he started finding that in a couple other sports. And what he found in most of those places, specifically the swimming places, is when they asked him, what is it that's different? And they said, our athletes have a different relationship to practice than others do. They love practice. And I remember I interviewed Holly McPeak. She's one of the best female beach volleyball and indoor volleyball players of all time. And I asked her, I said, why, you know, how did you get great? Because she's very well balanced, but very aggressive in the sense as an athlete and has done really well. She's like, wait, I realized that when I put in the practice, I made the connection that I was getting better. And I could see, I had the vision to see that I was earning the medal in practice, mm-hmm. not in the game. And we hear that sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so that level of understanding, to me, if you don't have that for entrepreneurship, if you don't love doing the podcast, yes, sometimes editing the podcast, sometimes putting in 60 hours and getting paid like you worked 20. And one of the simplest ways to be able to love that is to actually deal with your expenses in a way that you don't have to do that. You and I both know that. If you overinvest in your personal life expenses or your business expenses, then you're going to have to just work harder. Every time I waste $500, I wasted the time it took me to earn that. Now, when I was working at $25 an hour, that was 20 hours. Mm-hmm. When I can book one of my top coaching clients, that's like less than an hour of my time. But I don't always have, you know, so just like people say, oh, you make, you know, $250 an hour, $500 an hour. Like, no, when, or $1,000 an hour, when I have one of my top clients. Mm-hmm. When I don't, I'm making this per hour. Zero, nothing, nada. So you start averaging out a couple of zeros with $1,000 or $250 or $500. Like, oh, okay, this stuff averages out. And so just understanding the model. But if you want to be an entrepreneur, the same way I would tell most athletes that, well, at least my opinion means nothing on this because I'm not a professional basketball player, but most professional basketball players that I've said have said, other than your exceptions of Kevin Garnett, Kobe, LeBron, most of you all would be better off staying 4 years in college. Even if it meant risking getting the, you'll come out a better player. And Duke and Chapel Hill demonstrate that all the time with so many of their athletes that at least go 2 to 3 years versus others. If you're that committed, put in the time. If you really want to be an entrepreneur, if you're not willing to take the ego hit to say, yes, for 3 to 5 to 7 years, I'll be an employee that has a side hustle that eventually grows into a business. Then you're not ready to be an entrepreneur because then it's about your ego. And yet, if you do it that way, it's so much smoother. You just transition from I'm working 40 hours a week in my main job and 10 hours a week in my side hustle. And eventually I start making, you know, $1,000 a month, $2,000 a month. And then eventually someday I'm like, oh, you just evolve out of it rather than this dramatic F the boss, F them. If anywhere the word F comes out of your mouth when you're like ready to quit to become an entrepreneur, that's basically like saying, F dating Susie. I went on one date with Susie. F her. I'm going to go get married to somebody I've never met before. That'll show Susie. Well done, Zod, bud. That was not well played.
Yeah, it's very few personalities can handle the burn the boats, and because when you have those lean months and you start seeing your nest egg start shrinking down, a lot of people cannot psychologically handle that, you know. And so for me, one of the first things was I was presented of what entrepreneurship is and all those things. So it's almost like Mission Impossible is one of my favorite franchises. So it's like, should you choose to accept this mission, right? And it was like, it's uncertain. I don't know in 10 to 15 years what things are going to be like. It could be exciting. You can have some lows, but it's not going to be certain. If you're okay with that, the mental effects and all of that, just know what you're getting into, then by all means, go for it. And I was like, okay, cool. I'll go for it. And I think I still knew, but even then there were still some things that came up that are still coming up. And I'm like, man, this is tough. Maybe I should have stayed in school or something. I was like, my goodness.
Well, you know, the interesting thing is though, you're real quick, you're taking the risk, whether you're an employee. I mean, if you think you have no risks as an employee, that's the flip side too. You have risks. You might get fired like that because of something you didn't do. So there's that too.
Yeah. It's a paradox, right? You know, everything's a risk. It's this different risk that you're taking. And so that's the cool thing about it. But and even then, no matter which direction you choose, you could learn to play that game and still come out on top and use it to your advantage. So so really good stuff. I want to kind of close this out here. And one of the last questions is, if someone comes up to you on the beach, you just got done playing a game. Your team won, so you're in a good mood. You're resting up for the next one. And they say, what are 1 to 3 things that I could do starting today to start creating a more fulfilling and abundant life and integrate more family life and business into one nice, beautiful bow?
Sure. So the first thing is, today you can make the most out of your free time, whether you're an employee, a freelancer, an entrepreneur, whatever it is. So there are times where we might watch Netflix to veg out or this and that. But if the majority of your time outside of work is you consuming content and not moving towards your goals and dreams and not spending time with the people you enjoy most and or the hobbies you enjoy most, getting more time is not going to fix that any more than if you make $40,000 a year and you're spending above your means. When you make 50, you're going to spend money above your means again. So to me, you need to make the most of the time you already have. Because you might be fine. You might just realize, wow, I've not managed my time well. I love my job. I love my 401k. I love my boss. I love my coworkers. I love the social of my environment. You and I are talking about this, the difference between working from home versus being able to, you know, see people a lot and those sort of things. Mm-hmm. So number one, literally start making changes today without changing jobs, without touching your income. Second, same thing goes with your money. Live within your means, live well within your means, and really be intentional about what are you investing money in. Anything from as simple as if you're going clubbing, you know, when we were in college, we'd have a couple beers at home first before we bought $10 and $12 beers out. So without even judging drinking, now I don't drink even close to like I used to. I'd rather put my money into other things, but just being more intentional with your money and looking at if I can have, so our family has three Honda CRVs. Because they friggin' work. Mm-hmm. And there are cars that cost three times as much that look nice. So this cost, around Naples, it costs 5 to 10 times as much. But are they 5 to 10 times more utilitarian? Well, for what I need them for, no, I'm getting from point A to point B. So for me, that's not a thing. Now, for somebody who sells cars or somebody who's in high-end real estate, that might be a brilliant investment. But so understanding, when is it, are you really overinvesting? And then the simplest way to get started working towards a 3-day weekend specifically is start planning, well, first on your Saturdays and Sundays, but eventually start planning things on Friday as an entrepreneur. And I'm speaking to the entrepreneurs specifically who have control over your time. Start planning awesome things to do on Fridays that have nothing to do with work, and you'll figure out how to get stuff done Monday through Thursday. But if you don't plan something, you'll just show up because you will be scared. What if I sit here? We don't like, I mean, none of us, no entrepreneur likes literally just like, okay, I'm just going to just sit here and stuff. I don't care how much you make. We're still kind of like, I got to do something.
Yeah. It's a sense of paranoia. It's the book, Only the Paranoid Survive. That's literally it. So, but I really enjoyed this conversation, Wade. And, I think the listeners are going to get a lot of benefit out of this as well. Where can they keep up with you?
Absolutely. So you can go to 3dayweekendentrepreneur.com. So that's the number 3dayweekendentrepreneur.com. That will have links to the podcast. You can check out Julian's episode on there. It links to the other coaching and other resources we have. You could also just look me up, Wade Gault. There's other stuff. I have personal growth books and stuff. But the best place is 3dayweekendentrepreneur.com.
Awesome to hear. I will have all of that in the show notes. And thank you once again. And to listeners out there, stay awesome, be limitless, and as always, go be the CEO of your health and your life. Peace.